this has been probably one of the most interesting weeks that many of you have ever heard on the alternative media. And I welcome you back to another very special installment of Life, Liberty, and All That Jazz. I'm your host, if nothing else, once again this evening, Jeffrey Bennett, and you're listening to this program live on this 6th day of April, 2011. Joining us in just a moment will be returning for the third consecutive night, our good friend and counselor, Roger Sales, sometimes known as the town crier. I say these things, my friends, because the number of emails that I receive on a daily basis are quite intense anyway. It's not uncommon for me to receive 200 to 300. 70% of them get blown off. Some of them get used. Some of them get answered. But the number of emails that I continue to receive every single hour regarding our guest, regarding the subject matter, has been astounding. It tells me that you people are listening, number one. More importantly, that, well, contrary to what I believed for a long time, and in the words of John Stadtmiller, because you can handle the truth. And hope to God that you are going to do something with those things that you are learning here on this program. Before I bring our guest on, one more quick thing. Moments ago, I just posted a column on RepublicTradingGroupInternational.com. And most of you know it is excessively rare that I ever post an entire column. Because of the fact that this program is brought to you by Republic Trading Group. The name of the column is Why You Should Buy Gold and Silver Now, written by probably two of the most well-known and prolific financial writers in the industry, the Eden Sisters. Take a look at it later tonight. But as for now, let's get back to work. Roger Sales, welcome back to the program.
Jeffrey, I can't thank you enough, and I can't thank all the audience for your kind words. I've been at this many years. I couldn't get many people to listen. So seems like there's some people listening. And one of the conclusions I came to over those years, and I quit telling people about it about 10 years ago, is because I'd been socially ostracized. People had called me a tin hat wearing guy. You know, every name that you can call. I've been alienated from family and everything else just for trying to show the truth. And so I figured it was like beating your head against a wall because it feels so good when you stop. And it came to me that the American people weren't ready to listen. But I knew that they would be, and that time has come. And you're listening, and I appreciate it. And as always, I want to say thank God for the talents and the abilities given me and the chance I've had to work on them and bring them to some sort of a height of fruition. And I pray that you'll give us the thoughts and the words tonight that will fall upon the ready and willing and listening ears that'll touch your hearts and maybe light the fire of freedom in your breast. So thank you, Lord, for all these things and these people, and we'll move forward. We left off last night with talking about administrative law a bit, and administrative or regulatory agencies. They're referred to as both. A couple of years back, you know, I've been in this, like, you know, now over 18 years, and you don't get all of this at one time, and all of the picture doesn't come clear at one time, and you keep thinking about it because it obsesses me still. And a couple of years back, it hit me that this is really the key to understanding them, because we've learned in the last few nights how they've enslaved you. And what we know now is that you're considered property. Now, how do they administrate that? And this is what everybody comes in contact with, because who dings you? Who dings you when they come after you? The IRS comes after you, the enforcement division, or they're going to garnish your wages or take your car, or OSHA, or EPA, or BATF, or any of those. And those are all administrative agencies. So the administrative agency scheme was first used in France after the French Revolution. In fact, I remember, John doesn't remember this, but I do, the word bureaucrat, he told us many years ago, it came from the French bureau, and that means burlap. And they called bureaucrats because they had burlap on their desks in the administrative scheme. So that's where the word bureaucrat comes from, at least to best of my memory. So these agencies came into our lives in the 30s, and they were put into existence during Franklin Delano Roosevelt. You know, I got a friend in Atlanta who told me, he said, the whole time I was growing up, I thought Roosevelt's first name was Dam. So that's where they were put in, and because they were new, they had to have some kind of legal framework to work within, because they're going to regulate a regulated class. All right. And in the 30s, they tried for years to pass the Administrative Procedures Act. They didn't get it passed until after the war in 1946. It's in Title V of the United States Code. And those are the rules that administrative agencies absolutely have to operate by. Now, the wins you see, and then you've heard about people in that beat the IRS, etc., they beat them in regulations, because they have to do the regulations correct, and most of the time they don't. So if you understand regulations, you can hold these guys' feet to the fire, and because that's what the courts are there to do, they regulate Article 3, just like on the manor with the serfs, they regulate the slaves here, the citizens of the United States and the residents. And so if you can trip them up in some procedure they've done, you can win that way. And people think that's a great win, and it is a win. A win's a win, but it's not solving the problem of getting around to the basis of the system and correcting the inequities and the lies and deceits that are there. So it's important that we at least know a little bit about administrative agencies. And so what are the questions? What are they, and when do they come in existence? Well, they're agencies of people that are meant to regulate groups or administrate the law. We went over last night just a bit about how laws are made. Civics 101. You know, bills are either originated in the House or the Senate. They're passed by that body. When the bill is passed by both, if the bills don't agree, they go to a conference committee and hammer out something that's acceptable to both houses. When that's done, they send it over to whoever the sitting puppet is, and he signs it. At that point, it becomes law. Then they pass it to the appropriate administrative agency, and they promulgate regulations. We could do a whole program on regulations. I'm not going to cover a bunch of that tonight. There's three types, and only one of them applies to you, and that's substantive regulations. And a substantive regulation has to be published in the Federal Register, and it has to be published under a very explicit routine, and it's called notice and comment. So if you ever go to the Federal Register, which is the legal organ of the United States government, you'll see some regulations are just in there. Some of them have notice and comment, and that means they got to go out there and publish this. It'll say notice of proposed rulemaking, and they'll list whatever the regulation is. And at the bottom, they'll say, if you have a comment, send your comment to, and it'll give a person and an address. So the reason for that is because these regulations affect everybody, all right? So they have to put them out there, notice and the right to be heard, due process, and they get feedback. Then they have to wait and take all that feedback in, and what they're supposed to do is to take everyone's feedback and then re-promulgate the regulation, and they put it in again, and they put it in as notice of final rulemaking. And then that runs for 30 days or whatever it is, and then it can't take effect for another certain number of days, either 30 or 60 a days. So it's a long process, and it's very, very specific, and they've got to adhere to that. And if you can go back and trip them up on applying a regulation to you that was not properly promulgated, you can get out of it. And I'll tell you one of them, because I researched it and is how I learned all this, is a notice of summons for books and records, all right? And I went back and traced that thing back. You can trace regulations back, and it was never done with notice and comment, and it's got general applicability. So anyway, that's just a little background. It may be too complicated. I'm going to try and slow down a bit. You can always go back and listen to these broadcasts. That's why they're being recorded. They're currently in the RBN archives. You can pay a whopping $1.12 or whatever it is a month to listen to those and all the other fine programs on RBN. Or I believe, and Jeff can correct me if I'm wrong, that they will let you in one time to go in and sample the archives. So you take your choice. You should support the network. These people are doing you a great favor by an outlet to get this information out, and there's not very many other people and places you can do this, believe me, because I'm one that's been wanting to get it out for a long time. Okay, who do they administrate or regulate? Only entities that they have, here's our word again, jurisdiction over. How do they get jurisdiction? We're going to cover that in a second. How do they administrate? Well, they put these regulations out, and now they're not called laws. Actually, in the legal profession, they're called little laws. Now they're called policy. So you see what they've done? You want to point a finger at Congress for making laws. The real culprit is the administrative agencies, because they're the ones that interpret and apply the laws. And I think you'll find that every head of every administrative agency that creates policy are part of our enemy, because then they control the organization. And you can find a lot of times where they're promulgating regulations that are totally against the intent of Congress and opposite what the intent of the original legislation was. This is how they change the laws to control you. All right. So it's important that you understand this stuff. As I said, the first time the system was used was in the French Revolution. And I'm going to read you a regulation, and I think you'll find that it will bring a little things into focus that we've discussed the last couple of nights that I know is confusing to people. We're untying the knots in your mind. We're teaching you to think specifically. You know, I've had a saying, it's not what you think necessarily, it's how you think. And that's the reason I've been so successful as this, is because I tailored my thinking when I learned how these guys worked and how they did things to start thinking like them. And that has given me absolute great horizons of understanding. The regulations, when you go to the law library, you'll see the United States Code, and there's 50 titles. And then on another shelf, you're going to see a bunch of little books that are like handbooks, and they're called the CFR. And that's the Code of Federal Regulations. And what they do is, we're going to go to Title 26, everybody's favorite title, the Income Tax Code. And if you're going to go to the Code of Federal Regulations, it would be 26 CFR. And then there'll be a list of books of all the regulations that are there. And we're going to go to 26 CFR. And we're going to go right to the head of that first book. And under 1.1-1, that's CFR, 26 CFR 1.1-1. And it says, A, parentheses, little a, general rule. Section 1 of the code, the Income Tax Code, Title 26 USC, imposes an income tax on the income of every individual who is a citizen of the United States or resident. We've talked a little bit about those two terms the last couple of hours. Then it adds here, and to the extent provided by Section 871B or 877B on the income of a non-resident alien individual. So we've got a tax that's applied to every individual who's a citizen of the United States or a resident, and then we've got another tax over here on this mysterious non-resident alien with these two specific sections. Well, I'm going to give you a tip. If you go back and analyze those two sections, 871B and 877B, guess what you find? You find that that's the taxation that's in the original Constitution. So now back to our passport application, where we saw, and they're very emphatic, U.S. citizen or non-citizen U.S. national, there's two distinct political statuses there. What do we find in the income tax code right at the first of the regulations where the administrative agency is telling you who they've got jurisdiction over and who they regulate? We've got a citizen of the United States or a resident, and we've got a non-resident alien. Now, everybody, and listen, people laughed at us in the Patriot community. The Save a Patriot guy ridiculed this information for years, but they don't understand how these words are being used and how they've been twisted to deceive you. Okay? So, this is what they've done. When you say non-resident alien, and when I tell you that this tax is to non-resident aliens, you think it's a bunch of Mexicans or whoever has come into the country illegally. Non-resident alien, correct? Jeff?
That's what an awful lot of them seem to think.
Okay. Well, let me tell you how your enemy thinks and how they scheme. We know that the 14th Amendment now is the nexus of their control, right? Yeah. We know that the key word, the last word in the first phrase, the first time it appears in the Constitution, is reside, resident. And we know from the court cases that an important thing is has to convert, because a citizen of the United States is a federal citizen first, and then he's a state citizen second. But as it says in one of those law cases, an important element is needed to convert him to a state citizen. He must reside in it. That's why they ask you if you're a resident. All right? So let's take it even a step back. Let's take it to somebody everybody can relate to. If you're married and you got a wife, she's either pregnant or she's not pregnant. Is that pretty true?
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. Well, if you're a resident, you're either a resident or you're a non-resident. Is that right?
Based on everything you've taught us so far, I would say yes.
Okay. So, and if your citizenship is not the 14th Amendment citizenship, citizen of the United States or a resident, then you've got this other citizenship that they've told us about, this U.S. national, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's the only two options they offer in the passport application, the single most important document in the federal government's arsenal of documents to determine your political status. So, if my citizenship is a U.S. national, my citizenship is alien to the 14th Amendment citizenship, isn't it?
Absolutely.
So, in the tax code, the U.S. national is listed as a non-resident alien. I'm sure they just made a mistake on that. I doubt that they were meant to deceive anyone. Okay?
Yeah,
so,
okay.
if any of you... Now, hold it. There's one more point here. If you go on down from little a there, 1.1-1, parentheses, little a, we're going to go over to the next page under C. And there's an important question here. It says, who's the citizen? Question mark. Every person born or naturalized in the United States and subject to its jurisdiction is a citizen. We've heard that before in the last couple of nights, haven't we?
Yeah, we have.
Okay. So there's who your citizen is, a 14th Amendment citizen. Now, if you still don't believe me, would you believe a Secretary of the Treasury?
Well, I'm not sure I would believe anything that comes out of the mouth of a government representative, but for poots and giggles, we'll say yes.
Would you believe one from 1916? When they used
far better than I would today's, yes.
Okay. The benchmark case on the 16th Amendment, of which the IRS says is their taxing power, we won't go into that. That's a whole other program. Everybody knows it's bogus. The first case that was tried under the 16th Amendment, for those of you who've done some legal stuff in this area, you'll recognize it. It was the Brushaber versus Union Pacific Railroad. It's a long case. It's difficult to read. And in that case, Frank Brushaber was his name. He claimed that he was a non-resident alien. Now, you can pull that case up on the internet. Thank you, Debbie, for showing me this just recently. And it states in the write-up on the case that Frank Brushaber claimed he was a non-resident alien. That's just about the case. But whenever there's an important case on taxation, because it's under the Treasury Department, The Secretary of the Treasury goes back and he writes a memorandum to circulate internally, and it's called a Treasury decision, or TD. And if you, and you're going to have to dig in a law library somewhere, I don't know that it's online, TD 2314, I'm positive, is the number. And that was the Treasury decision that was written from the Brushaber case. And the Secretary of the Treasury was named McAdoo, one of these families that's been in government for several generations, obviously part of the plan. And in the Treasury decision, in the first paragraph, it says, Frank Brushaber, a citizen of the state of New York and a non-resident alien. So if you think that applies to Mexicans or some other ethnic or nationality that's here illegally, you go back and argue with McAdoo or argue with Brushaber. Don't argue.
Raj, it's interesting you bring this up, because while we were talking yesterday, I had come across an article that was not necessarily geared to specifically what you're talking about, but I began to smell this mentality of these illegals coming here to this nation, don't care what country they come from. And I begin to wonder if they don't understand our laws, our codes, and our regulations better than most Americans do.
Most Americans have no idea that regulations are what govern them, if you want to know the honest truth.
Okay.
Much less any of the things we've covered so far here. So this is a very salient point that's following us. There's 50 titles of the United States Code. There's 50 little things of the 50 CFRs. Each code title has an accompanying set of regulations. And at the first of every agency, they have to tell you who they regulate, don't they? If they're going to have all these little laws behind them, don't they have to tell you who they relate to? And this is a really interesting point, and I didn't know this until recently myself, and John told me. In the tax code, we've got our two distinct types of citizens, don't we? We've got, they call it different, now it's called a non-resident alien for the U.S. national, and we still got the citizen of the United States and the resident on the other side. Because with taxes, they had two different sets of statuses that they had to regulate, so they had to put those two statuses in the CFR 26, the tax code, even though they, it's why they hit it so well, okay? But in every other CFR set of regulations, they regulate residents only.
Now, I have to ask you a question just for clarity for the audience's sake. You have continued to reference John. You are not talking about the owner of this network, obviously.
No, I'm not. And of course, this is my personal relationship. I'm talking about my mentor, and his name's John Benson. And I've been around some real famous people and really people of great accomplishment in my lifetime, especially in the music business. I hung out with people like Ringo Starr. I've been with the Eagles. I've been with a lot of very famous musicians. I've been with a lot of the people that run the record companies and really run the stuff behind the scenes. I've come across. I've been at parties where sitting presidents, Jimmy Carter was there with his social, with the guys that protect him. There were private parties in Macon, Georgia, the Capricorn picnic, where people were openly doing cocaine and all kinds of drugs, and there's the president walking around. Okay, so I've been around some real high profile stuff. I've met some great people along the road of my life. All right, John Benson is the single finest man that's ever crossed my path. He has done more to change my life, and hopefully he's going to have an effect on all of you. And this is a great man. Unassuming, portly little gentleman.
My understanding is that John's out there listening tonight, so thank you, John.
Hey, thank you, John, from Roger. He knows I've told him this stuff before. So it's very important that you go in and understand these administrative agencies. And now you see how they've tricked you with words. They see how they've tricked you with legal definitions. You see how they've set up this feudal system to oversee you, and they've allowed you to come in and volunteer in, just like the voluntary serfs in England, and they haven't made it very easy for you to volunteer out. And I'm going to tell you, you can do it, but you better be ready to stand toe-to-toe with the devil, because they don't like sheep getting out of the pen. All right. A lot of people have got a hold of me and said, oh, yeah, I want to get out of taxes. Well, let me tell you something. This is something John told us early. I didn't understand it. A lot of you don't understand it yet. This isn't about taxes. This is about freedom. Okay. And that's a big thing to realize. Big difference. I mean, I feel like I should have been born with a blue birthmark over half my face. All right. And running around the streets yelling freedom. Because that's what this developed into to me. And I hope that's what it spurns and initiates you to do, you listeners, okay? So this is how they control you, is with regulations and threats and fear and intimidation. And the big one is fear of loss. Because, I can't go up against the IRS. They'll throw me in jail. Loss of liberty. I can't go up against the IRS. They'll take my car. Loss of possessions. They'll put a lien on my house. Fear of loss. That's why they get you to register everything, so they know what you got, so they can threaten to come take it away from you. That's how they control you. If you really want to take... Yes, it is, isn't it? See, that's what I'm talking about. It's how you think. You got to come at this stuff from a back door. You can't approach it from the front door with normal people because you don't understand what they're talking about, and there's all kinds of traps laid out to trick you. You got to go back and use logic with a lot of this stuff. Hopefully enough of you have absorbed, and I know it's complicated, and I know it takes time. You're going to have to study. I'm sorry. I can't do it for you. I can explain it to you. I can tell you about it. I can answer your questions, but I can't make this information yours. You're the only one that can do that. And you're not going to progress until you make this information yours. If you want to take a copy of that affidavit and go file it and claim your natural political status, God-given rights, now you've got access to the Constitution. But you better know this information, because, man, they're going to ding you, and they're going to try and trip you up. They don't like sheep getting out of the pen. If we go back to the IRS, so now we know we're a non-resident alien, guess what tax form you file? A 1040 NR. It goes to a specific service center in Philadelphia. They handle all the non-resident alien returns. If you do that, they're going to send you a letter and ding you with a $5,000 frivolous filing penalty. They're not going to answer any of your questions. They're not going to address anything we've brought up. They're going to ding you. When we started doing this, they started paying out initially. You're supposed to be able to go back and capture 3 years of income that you've paid in because you've filed erroneously. Well, pretty soon, real quickly, they found out what was going on, and they started dinging us back then with $500 frivolous filing penalties. It's now, I'm told, $5,000. And they immediately start attacking interest and penalties on that. And the reason for that is because if you're going to get out of the system, they're going to at some point try and enforce everything that you've been in a contractual nexus with them. It cost me $35,000 when I sold my house. They had $30,000. I bet I didn't know $2,000 in taxes. Before they got finished with me, it was $30,000. And then they sent me a letter afterwards and said, we've taken this out and we've added another $5,000 for taxes we think you're going to owe. Okay.
Hey, the music man's upon us, my friends. Stay with us. We'll be right back with Raj.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.
In times like these, you can't depend on the government to keep you warm and fed, but you can depend on the Vermont Bun Baker to do just that. With the Vermont Bun Baker, you'll never be in a situation where you can't cook, bake, fry, boil water, or heat your home all at the same time. One of the most revolutionary cook stoves, wood stoves ever, the Vermont Bun Baker is available with or without soapstone veneer, a natural stone that retains heat and radiates it back into the room once the fire is out. a beautiful addition to your home. The Vermont Bun Baker has an efficiency rating well above 75% and qualifies for the wood stove tax credit. For more information, watch the Vermont Bun Baker on YouTube and live stream, or visit us at www.vermontwoodstove.com. You can also reach us by calling 1-866-SOAPSTONE. Don't ever be hungry or cold because the power's gone out. With a Vermont Bun Baker, all you have to worry about is what's for dinner.
Are skyrocketing prescription costs draining your budget? If you don't have insurance or are taking medication not covered by insurance, the Powerhouse Savings Card can lower your prescription costs by up to 50%. Now you and your family can save 20 to 50% on all prescriptions. It's accepted by most pharmacies and mail-order pharmacies nationwide. No prescription card is easier to use. Just show your card and save 20 to 50% right on the spot. There are no monthly fees, just a one-time processing fee of only $4.95 for you and your immediate family. Stop paying full price for prescriptions. Stop going without the medication you need because it costs too much. Now your family can get the prescriptions they need at a cost you can afford. Call 1-800-963-0232 now and start saving money with the Powerhouse Savings Card. Call 1-800-963-0232. 1-800-963-0232. 1-800-963-0232.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Are you or someone you know suffering from high blood pressure, cholesterol, or chest pains? Are you looking for a more natural way to overcome these health challenges? Extendovite is made from herbs known to help with these symptoms. Made from garlic, cayenne, hawthorn, and four other herbs, Extendovite goes to work detoxifying heavy metals and killing fungus and virus to enhance your overall health. For only $69.95 plus shipping and handling for a two-month supply of either capsules or liquid, you too can begin on your path to better health. For more information, call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822. Or visit our website at heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Twisted sense of humor, I would let that piece keep going until Bing Crosby got to the part where he said, "We're poor little sheep who have lost our way." Bah, bah, bah. Welcome back to tonight's Life, Liberty, and All That Jazz. Let's get right back to Roger Sales, and his information is just too darn important to listen to me babble, so let's get back to it. I'll be back.
Okay, sheep, I'm going to be your shepherd. I'm going to lead you to the great pasture with the big, tall, green grass. So what I came to the thought a number of years ago that how they've really done this, and I found God because I found Satan, and I found Satan because I learned all this information. And I said, no man could put this together. He had to have help, and if there's a Satan, there's got to be a God. All right. So that this is once again a backdoor way is what led me back to a really firmly spiritual basis in my life. That's why I start every one of these with a prayer. And it seemed to me that when Moses went up to get the Ten Commandments and he came back down from the mountain and he saw all of the Israelites or the Hebrews, not the Jews, the Israelites or the Hebrews. And what were they doing, Jeff? You with me? Can I use you as a sounding board here? What were they doing?
Got sidetracked. So
okay, no problem. I'll roll. What they were doing was worshiping the golden calf.
Oh, yes. Edward G. Robinson. I remember that in the movie.
The golden calf of materialism. because it was after the 30s when they cranked everything back up and they owned all the corporations then that they started selling you all of the products from the corporations that they owned. They bought all the corporations for pennies on the dollar after the stock crash that they manipulated in the 20s. And then they got you on credit. And look where you are now. All right. So it's through materialism that, at least this is my opinion, that they've really, because materialism, oh, now you got to keep up with the Joneses. I want that latest new widget. I need that. They got that. I got to have one over there. You lose track of everything because you're concentrating on material possessions and not on the things that are important, such as your freedom and these timeless and ethical ideas and principles that are immutable. All right. So now I'm going to really upset you. Let's go talk just briefly about the monetary system. The monetary system, when the Federal Reserve says it needs $1 billion, they call the Treasury, and the Bureau of Printing and Engraving prints up, and you see it on TV with those printing presses, those offset presses rolling. They print up $1 billion, and they get $1 billion in whatever denominational bill they have, and they deliver it to the Federal Reserve with $1 billion worth of bonds. Okay? It's no coincidence that bond is the root word of bondage. All right? Anybody out there, you ever take out a loan with anybody that didn't give you compound interest on one side and have collateral to back it up on the other? It's no different with bonds. They take that money and they discount it at the discount Fed discount rate, what you hear, the one where they loan it to banks at a lower rate, and the banks turn around and loan it out to you in the form of loans where money is created at a higher rate. It's like a wholesale retail situation. But those bonds are what they keep themselves and they sell in the international market. The bond market is the underpinning of all this. The bond market is what's eroding right now. You know, as James Carville said, when I die and come and get resurrected, I want to come back as the bond market, all right? Because he realized back then this was. So if we know that loans have collateral and interest, bonds have collateral and interest too.
So Roger, you know, it's interesting you put it in this fashion, referencing bond and bondage. I learned this many, many years ago and have attempted to get my audience to understand. Think about Wall Street today in the way they talk about stocks and bonds. Now go back to the colonial period in this country, maybe Nathaniel Hawthorne's Scarlet Letter with the gal who committed adultery and had an A, and she was put in stocks and bonds. Think about it in those terms. It makes a lot of sense. Yeah.
Very interesting on that. I'd never thought about that, but you're correct. So if we know that the bonds have an interest rate, and that's the big problem right now, is that they got to keep the interest rate up high enough where investors will buy those bonds because that's the money that comes in that supports the government, all right? But what's the collateral? We know about the interest rate a little bit. What's the collateral for those bonds? You think it's national parks and all the land that they've taken and
it's
sold
you.
To the Chinese?
It's you.
Go look in the mirror, baby. You're the collateral. They made you property when you volunteered into slavery, and it's your taxes that pay the investors of the bonds. You're the property. That's what your taxes are all about. Okay? Now, that's with the debt that's due. You say you worry about your kids. Hey, you better worry about your great-great-great-grandkids because they're the ones that are going to be paying this stuff, too, if we don't make some changes. And you people are got to do that, okay? So that's a little bit of that I don't think I've ever even heard anybody say, and it's just something that I figured out along the way. Okay? So you're the collateral that backs these bonds. China's holding, what, a couple of $1 trillion of them? Japan's got a bunch of them. That's the problem right now. They're scared to death. Japan's going to have to sell the bonds to get money and to try and do something with reconstructing their country and the infrastructure. So all of this is tied in worldwide. It's this worldwide matrix. I had another interesting thought a number of years ago that I don't think I've ever heard anybody elaborate on. You know, Nixon closed the gold window in 71, right?
Yes.
Okay, and that was the same year Kissinger went over to Saudi Arabia and cut the deal with the Saudi Arabians. We'll buy all your oil, you buy our bonds, and keep all your money in New York, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So don't you think that these guys took us off the gold standard and put us on the oil standard? Because it's them that's buying the bonds that back up the economy. Not gold anymore, oil. So you want to understand how important this oil thing is, the Libya, the Middle East stuff that's happening right now, all of that. We got a currency that's backed by oil, kids.
Black gold.
Right on. So we're going to go into the tax system for just a little bit because and it's amazing to me how time flies around here. And we're going to elaborate more on this in the future because this is also complicated. But I'll give you some teasers. And if you want to find out, everybody, I guess, knows what a 1040 form is at this stage of their lives. But you don't know what a 1040 form is, because just like they brought the feudal system over to this country and imposed it, changing all these names and these titles, they brought the English system of taxation over to this country, and that's the taxation system that you're under. And if you want to know, you might get your pencil and paper sharp here. I'm going to tell you what it is. You can go do your own research a little bit. We're going to elaborate on this much more in the future. A 1040 form is called a statute staple. A statute staple bond. And it was the key thing from the English tax code, the collector of the revenue, and in England it's called the exchequer, that they used for hundreds of years. And here's the history of it. It started in 1258 in one of the Elizabeth Queen, you know, they do third year of Elizabeth whatever reign. And the statute that started this all started in 1258. Now we're going back a few years, and it was called the Statute de Mercantoribus. And the reason they passed that is because England has a unique problem. They're an island. They can't produce everything they need, and they don't have all the natural resources they need that they need to live on a day-to-day basis. So they depend greatly on trade. And the towns were the traders, the international traders, which are now the international bankers, used. They had a unique problem. If they came in and tried to do trade and somebody that was English didn't want to pay them, they were foreigners and they had no standing in the courts of England to go and collect what they were owed. And if they didn't collect what they owed, they couldn't go on to the next stop in their trading route, etc., etc. And it was keeping traders evidently away from England and depriving England of things they needed. So they passed this Statute de Mercantoribus law. And what that did was it made certain sea towns, port towns in England, called statute towns.
And now, what was the terminology you gave that? It sounded like Latin or Greek or something.
Well, it is, a lot of law comes from Latin because, you know, it was Rome. Most of our laws are based off some form of Roman civil law, you know. And it was the Statute de Mercantoribus. It's spelled just like it sounds. I could drag it up, but I got all my programs closed.
No, you don't need to.
Clear. Okay. I'm just telling a story. We're going to elaborate on this a lot more if people want to hear it. I'm assuming they do. So what they did was pass this statute, and what that allowed the mayor, the statute, the merchant guy of the town to do was if any of these people owed the traders money, he could go through a process where they could literally get the guy in a legal situation where the sheriff in the town in England could then go seize anything that came through his hands, money, rents, property, etc., to satisfy the debt of the trader so the trader could go away and would come back. Okay? And as this developed, they were called statute towns. You could also, if you want to do some research on this, you could say statute merchant. Okay? And what happened was it morphed into the king. It was so successful that the king saw it as a way for him to take this process and use it in the collection of his taxes. And that's what happened. And for hundreds of years in England, The process was based on a statute staple. I'm not going to get into it any more than that. We'll cover it in much more depth later. It's complicated, okay? But it's exactly the system. Once again, I asked you the question the other night, Jeff. If you were going to start a whole new system and come in and take control of our country, would you go conjure up a whole new system with all the contingencies that might happen and everything you got to think about? You're not going to do that.
You're going to go back to what's proven, what's tried and true.
And that's exactly what they've done, and they've changed all the words and tricked you as usual so nobody would figure this out, and that's what's controlling you in your tax system, all right? In fact, when John and Glenn were doing all the research on this stuff, they went to the intercollegiate library thing where you can put a book in, and it'll search all of the universities and libraries in the United States, right? And there were some particular books by English authors, one named Chitty, another named Price, that they needed to find out about this process. They put the book in there. There was only two books in the entire United States in the library systems. One was at Texas A&M University, and the other was at the Library of Congress. So I ask you, how the heck are our judges and our lawyers supposed to know about this process when there's only two books that cover any of it in the entire country?
They're not supposed to know about it, and that's by intent.
Of course it is. So that's as much as I was going to cover there. Like I said, we'll get into that more. Since we're on a roll here, let's talk about
getting near your time period.
I know. There's a lot of press these days about people leaving the country and expatriating themselves. And you have to make an appointment at the U.S. Embassy in the country you're in. Used to could do it in 4 hours. Now it's like 4 or 6 months. It used to be the $25. Now they've raised it to $470-something, almost $500 to do it. And you sever your ties completely with the United States if you're a citizen of the United States or a resident. If you do what I did, I didn't have any problem getting a passport. I haven't had any problem getting my Social Security. I'm traveling as a true, free American with constitutional God-given rights, and nobody says boo to me. I don't want to expatriate myself. All I want to do is to be able to claim my rightful by birthright citizenship.
You, several days ago, sent me a column dealing with that very issue, and I will endeavor to get that column posted. Both at Republic Trading Group International and the Federal Observer later this evening. And we're just going to call it a classroom continuation or something of that nature.
You know, that guy's name, I want to say it's Nestor, but it's not, but it's close. And I spoke to him on the phone before I moved because I was checking out what to do with my finances down here, and I was checking out Uruguay, and I found out nobody up there knew anything about Uruguay. This guy's pretty high profile and knows a lot about this stuff. He's right there in Phoenix, Jeff, is what I was going to tell you. Anyway... That is what's happening all over the world. People are expatriating in huge numbers. All right? And I could tell you a story because I was on my first flight down here. I met a guy from the Jamaican embassy that did this. And 3 years ago, it was starting to bubble up. And so I met him, and the next morning, and the flight was over, we were standing in line for the bathroom. And, you know, everybody needs to go to the bathroom after an all-night flight, and you've been sleeping. And I started talking to him about this stuff, standing in line in the bathroom. I said, you know, there's two types of citizenship, and I go into all this stuff. Let me tell you what, that guy couldn't get away from me fast enough. He didn't even go to the bathroom, man. He went up the aisle like a scalded gazelle, and I never saw him again. So, yeah, it was an interesting story, all right? So, I don't believe myself that there's a political solution to the problems of America. I love Ron Paul. I've met him personally also, by the way, and shaken his hand and spoke with him in Atlanta. Whether it's Jesse Ventura as a running mate or whatever, you got these people up there. They can't change the country just through being a president. They got to change the system. They got to get rid of this demon system. And the biggest problem is, you know, America's not just a country. It's based on morals and ethics and principles. And as John Adams said, our constitutional is only suitable for a moral and ethical people. And I don't think there's anybody listening here that'd say that America is a moral and ethical nation.
I would agree with that.
You're never going to clean up the country until you go back and clean up the basis. The brood mares out there that have got 10 different kids by 12 different fathers. All of the trash and the degradation of morals and ethics in the country, that's what's allowed them to take control. And until you get that straightened out, you're never going to have your country back with a constitution. It doesn't make a fat rat's behind who you elect as president. And if he's a good one, they're probably going to try and kill him or kill him anyway.
Well, so, one of the biggest arguments that both you and I run into all the time is, oh, the best way to control this is term limits. That's never going to happen because the very people that are going to have to pass that legislation are the very people that would be putting their own butts on the line to be getting put out of a job, and that ain't going to happen.
So, you know, the best thing we can do is to take this type of information that we've covered, the truth, the deception, the trickery, and you got to study it. You got to work at it. You got to make it yours. And I don't know what you're going to do with it. Some of you are warrior types. You're going to want to go out there and file affidavits and fight these guys. If you don't want to do that, you know, go start telling people about it. We're going to post all these three broadcasts and more on Jeff's site. They'll be totally free. You get people to go listen to this stuff and start understanding what's happening. You educate them, all right? So you can do that, because people are always saying, well, I'm only one person. What can I do? I'm only one person. Look what I'm doing, all right? Look what I've gone through to get to the point where I'm doing this and delivering this information to you, because I want to make a difference. Just like when I talked to Jeff a couple of weeks ago and we started talking about this, and he said, Roger, I'm ready to make a difference. And I said, you get me on, baby. We're gonna cluster flock these people with black swans. Okay? So this is important. If you don't tell people, what else can you do? Start writing letters. Write the State Department. Say, listen, I just was going to apply for a passport, and I was reading it, and I see there's two distinct political statuses or types of citizens here. Could you tell me with some specificity exactly what they are, what their legal rights and duties are, and how they're differentiated? What if the State Department got 20 or 30,000 letters like that? You think they'd start getting nervous?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, man. So I don't care what you do. Do something.
Well, what I would like to do is next time we're together, which is going to be next week, if you're so up for it, and we'll figure out which day it's going to be. But I'd like to use my own little situation as kind of a test, because I'm not the only one in this boat. 2 years ago, maybe 3 years ago, I had to go out and get a passport. Well, I wasn't thinking, just like the average idiot out there. And what I want to talk to you about, it won't take too long, is exactly how I can reverse that or augment it.
Well, you go back and get another original application, and if you want to file this affidavit and you want to do this, and it ain't easy, all right? It looks easy and it is easy to do, but it's the consequences afterwards that get a little bit.
Absolutely.
Free, you know, it's like the guy over in India that's walking off on those hot coals, okay? You just send that in and reapply. All right, and there's some tricks in applying for a passport. We'll cover it more in depth if you want to do that one night on a program. And whether you ever even leave the country or not, it's good for identification inside the country too. So if you want to claim this status and you want to make that claim, you got a passport. Now, it doesn't look any different from any of the other ones, but believe me, they kept my affidavit when they sent the passport back. They sent my birth certificate back. They didn't send the affidavit back.
Interesting. Okay.
All right. So there's a lot of things we can expand on and we can talk about, but we're getting close to the end of our third hour here, and this is real important to me, okay? And I'm going to read. I'm going to read from the Bible. I choose to use the Farrar Fenton Bible. A lot of people don't know who that is. He was an Englishman, a very successful businessman in several different areas, and when he was at Oxford in the 1850s, he came to the conclusion that England was losing its way because they were reading the King James Bible, and that was old, antiquated language, and most people couldn't understand it and relate to it. So he made this Bible his life's work, and he went back and took the original Greek and Hebrew, and he translated. It took him 55 years or more. And every time he'd come to a word and he didn't know what it was, he would write. Now, they didn't have email back then. He'd write a letter to the people around the world that were experts in that language, and he wouldn't move forward in his translation until he had a consensus opinion on the correct translation of that word. And it reads in modern English. It's a fantastic Bible. So I'm going to read to you from Revelation 18. After this, I saw another angel descending from the heaven, possessing great authority, and the earth was illuminated with his majesty. And with a voice of strength, he proclaimed, Babylon the Great has fallen, and now has become a refuge of demons, and a haunt for every malign spirit, and a hold on every filthy and hateful bird, because every nation has been made drunk by her with the fury of her fornication. And the kings of the earth have committed fornication with her, and the merchants of the earth have been enriched by the power of her luxury. Then I heard another voice from the heaven saying, Come out of her, my people, that you may not be partners with her sins, and that you may not become recipients of her plagues. For her sins are piled up as high as heaven, and God has remembered her wickedness. Repay to her what she has given, and redouble it in accordance with her doings. The cup which she has poisoned, poison it double with her. And she has glorified herself and luxuriated. Give her in the same way torment and anguish, because in her heart she says, I sit a queen, I'm not a widow, and I shall never see suffering. Because of this, in a single hour her plagues have come, death, anguish, and famine, to be burnt in fire, because God her judge is mighty. And the kings of the earth who committed fornication and luxuriated with her shall weep and wail over her, when they shall see the smoke of her burning, standing afar in fear of her torment. She shall cry, Alas, alas, the great city of Babylon, the mighty city, how has your judgment come in a single hour? The merchants of the earth shall weep and grieve for her because of their cargo. None buys any more. Their cargo of gold and of silver and of jewels and of pearls and cotton and purple and silk and scarlet and all sweet wood and ivory toys and all products of costly wood and of brass and of iron and of marble and of cinnamon and of cloves and scents and myrrh and incense and wine and oil and fine flour and wheat and cattle and sheep and horses and carriages and bodies and souls of men.
We're out of time. Roger, thank you. We'll get coordinated. We'll be back next week. Apropos, we're closing with the Beatles.
Ow!
Man, we'll see everybody. Take care.
See you, bro. Tomorrow. Muchas gracias.
The next round of the work.